I'd like now to invite Ian Crute to join us for the first of these presentations on biotechnology, intellectual property, and 21st century crops. Professor Crute is chief scientist at the Agricultural and Horticultural Development Board. He was also the director of Rothamsted Research, a very important research institute. He has been a member of the Royal Society Working Group on biological methods of enhancing food crop production, and the lead expert in the UK Foresight Project on food and farming futures. He's won his fair share of medals along the way. He has been a British Society of Plant Pathology president. He has also won the British Crop Production Council Medal and the Royal Agricultural Society of England Research Medal. And Ian holds a professorship from the University of Oxford. Ian.
Thank you, Chris. Good evening, everybody. Good to see you all. I've got 15 minutes, and I want to make half a dozen points in that period of time. As Chris said, at the moment, although I've had my career as a public sector scientist, I now work employed in an organisation that's funded by the agricultural industry of the UK. I shan't say more than that at the moment, but it's an interesting change for me over the last 3 years. So the first point that I really want to make is that actually if we look back, science and technology has just been enormously important in getting us where we are now. Just look at those figures, look back 50 years, look forward 50 years. The point I'm making here is that land use is really going to be of critical importance. We've doubled the world's population in the last 50 years, more than doubled, and yet land we have increased by a rather small percentage. Fortunately, we've doubled yield of our staple crops, and we've provided more food per capita, although of course there are still people who are undernourished, indeed starving in some cases. What are we going to do as we look forward to the next 50 years? Are we going to plough more land, or are we actually going to increase yields again? And I want to convince you that actually the former, the latter is what we must do. We must increase yields. This is some interesting data. Very quickly, just to make that point again, this was published recently from 1985 to 2005. Where we need to be is going up this graph here. That's where yield is increasing, as distinct from increasing production by simply ploughing more land, which is what's happening over here. So this tells us on this side that we're actually producing more food or more of a particular crop, 174 crops here. The size of the circles determines the importance of the crop. Actually, over here, we've got some bad news stories with some of our oil crops, but actually our carbohydrate crops, and we need to be up here in the future. So we need sustainable systems, and these images here tell us something about the issues. We've got to conserve both our forests and our grassland, so we don't want to be ploughing, destroying forests and ploughing grassland. But if we look back in time, we had production systems. By chance, there are 16 individuals in this painting by Bruegel. There are 16 combine harvesters in that picture. You know, my thesis here is that we can't look backwards. Although, of course, this was farming when there was no fossil fuels, the energy was provided by horses and water and wind. We now are dependent on fossil fuels, at least for the time being. But ultimately, we have population where we have to think about the intensification of agriculture. So 18 generations apart, people are still starving, but fewer people probably are starving now than perhaps in that period in the 16th century. And this really tells us, this is from the Foresight study that Chris referred to, this tells us something about where we've come from and where we might be going. And we think we've got volatile prices. This is prices volatility on a 1960 baseline. We think we've got volatility now in world prices. This is where we've come from. And in this 20-year period, from the early 80s to the food spike, the food price spike of the 2007, the world's been awash with food. And essentially, that's created some change in the way that we've looked at this issue of food production. And it's bred complacency. It's led to a public disinvestment in the technical skills and the research capacity and the extension services that we need. With the exception of China and Brazil, almost every country in the world, including the developing world, have actually disinvested in what they really need looking to the future. There's been a change in focus. We've actually, quite positively, but in some senses we now have to reorientate, put an awful lot of effort into looking at the environmental impact of agriculture. We've actually started to address some of the socioeconomic issues, and of course we've invested heavily in basic science. Some of that has got to be brought into land and actually applied to the issues that we now see that we're confronting looking out into the future. And of course, we've had a lot of market-driven commercial investment, which isn't necessarily addressing some of these key global issues. We're now entering a different world, and we have to recognize what we've been doing over the last 20 years and think about readjusting our resource allocation. So sustainable intensification, some of you may have heard of this term. This is really a concept about simultaneously increasing productivity whilst also increasing resource use efficiency and reducing the negative environmental impacts. It's an integrating concept, and it meets many of the challenges. It's all about outcomes. It's not really determined by how one gets there, but does one get there? It's about data, not dogma. It's an inclusive concept, and it's a both-and situation, not an either-or. So I have, as a scientist, a hypothesis. The hypothesis is that to produce as efficiently as possible on the smallest footprint of land, which is capable of delivering predictably what the market requires, or if you're a subsistence producer, what your dependents require, is the most sustainable and probably the most profitable way to farm. So I look for evidence that will disprove that hypothesis. The components of sustainable intensification are all about increasing genetic potential, doing everything you can to actually make sure that the crops and livestock are efficient in terms of their energy conversion. Agriculture is all about converting solar energy into chemical energy for our utilization. That we realize that genetic potential by the systems of production that we use, that we reduce waste in the system, and that through that process we also reduce environmental impact. Here's a good example of something where the technology exists, but which has not yet been brought to fruition. We've known for decades about the potential of genes in plants that contribute resistance, the plant's immune system. Here are just a couple of examples, very striking in cereal crops: resistance at the top to a virus disease and the resistance at the bottom to a fungal disease. We are not exploiting all the technology that we now know and all the knowledge that we have from 20 years of investment in really understanding how plants resist disease. Possibly because the market isn't pulling hard enough, but also because, to some extent, it's the public investment, whether it's in major crops or in minor crops, has diminished, and effectively people have been happy enough just to do the science rather than pull it through into practice. We're going to need to use this technology in the future. Food is now a political issue. It's right at the centre of an awful lot of other things. Global trade, energy issues, environmental issues I've referred to, emerging technologies of genomics, nanotechnologies, and of course it impacts on nutrition and health. So it has become a political issue. There's an awful lot of political rhetoric and an awful lot of talking about it. These words now need to be translated into deeds, and there is precious little effort, precious little evidence that the effort to do that is actually as high on the political agenda as some of the rhetoric. And this is the prize that I think we need to be striving for. This again is a graph from Foresight, which demonstrates here we are at 2000, 2010. You can see the 7 billion of population, which is referred to in the title of this session. As we look out, if global development continues and the developing world continues to grow in the way that we hope it will in terms of increased prosperity, reproductive rates will decline. And actually, with luck, and indeed there's every chance, that the population will stabilize at around about between 9.5 and 10 billion. There's obviously some error on that. That's a prize worth striving for, and it's really important that in this decade that we actually recognise that what we do in this decade, it will take another 20 or 30 years for the work that we put in this decade to be realised, but the prize that is there to have is an important one to strive for. But we must not forget that there are people, as we sit here, who are hungry, and that actually what goes on in cities now, particularly the urbanisation of the world, which of course a couple of years ago we reached a position where more people are living in cities than in rural areas, and this is really what happened in 2007. This was the trajectory of reaching millennium goals, essentially still around about 0.8 billion people hungry. But as soon as that food price spike came, we lifted the number of hungry people. And that is happening today in cities because of the volatility in the food system. And so to some extent, that's a key determinant. We have to recognise that we have a today issue as well as a tomorrow issue. And those are the things that we need to address looking forward. And I think that is all that I have to say. Thank you.